vivaciousness that encourages me to get to know more about her. She has a story of strength that I believe every alcoholic in this room will benefit from. Without taking up any more of her time, I give you Jill Russ. Hi, I'm Jill. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jill.
Glad to be here. Thank you so much. She said, I'm nervous. I said, we can trade spots. She did a very good job. You know, it's really nice to see people early in sobriety to jump in. And there's more to being sober than just going to meetings. And I want to thank you for your graciousness, your hospitality. And let's give everybody on the committee a thank you for all that it takes to pull this together. I know how to show up, but you know what? You guys taught me how to be a finisher, to actually start something and finish it. And that's what sobriety is about. It's about learning how to be honest. It's learning how to be responsible and being a woman of my word. Those were none of the things that traits that I had when I came in here. I was reminiscing and I was driving down here, and I hope that I get to find the gentleman this weekend that helped me tremendously when I first got sober. I came down to Louisville for quite a few weekends when I first got sober. There's a gentleman by the name of Ronnie from the Healing Place that he may not know, but we often don't know who our teachers are. But he carried a very strong, clear message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And through that, I found hope to get myself into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, find a woman that would sponsor me, and show me how to do this deal. And since then, I haven't had to pick up a drink. Okay, what was life like? It was a mess. And that was my middle name. And I tend to be a girl of more, imagine that. I was the girl you could dress up, but you couldn't take out, and I still try that. But what I found is I just stayed at the party way too long, guys. Drank for a long time, and it felt really good, and it was a lot of fun. But at some point, that changed. I have one brother that's 9 years older than me. And I can't say that I drank because I was in a horrible, dysfunctional family. You know, my parents were mean. They were abusive. I didn't have any of those things. I had a loving mother and father that probably loved me to the point they gave me anything that I wanted at any given time, good or bad. They did whatever they could to try to fix me. I was always broken. And it was everybody else's job to put me back together again and make me feel better. And I always thought that everything on the outside, if I had more of this or more of that, that everything externally was going to make something internally be whole. And I searched for that my entire life. And I go back and I think of before I ever picked up a drink. You know, I remember being a little kid and remember wanting my parents to be proud of me, wanting to get good grades when I went to school, caring about my teachers, actually caring about my brother, which is amazing. And had a genuine concern and compassion for others. But I don't know what happened, because where I was when I came in these rooms at the end of my drinking and where I started, I was not the same person. Something shifted, something changed. I lost those morals. And, you know, we talk about where we crossed that line. I don't know when I did that. I don't know that it matters. What I know is that I couldn't find anything to fix me. And my parents took me to psychiatrists, psychologists, I mean, you name it, they did it. They bought me what I needed. They moved me to different schools. And there was nothing that fixed me. I would have relief. I would have moments of good time, okay? But it was just relief. It was temporary. And I know the difference today between temporary and freedom. There's a difference between relief and freedom. And what I found in these rooms is freedom. Life still shows up. People still do things. But guess what? I can be free of that today because you show me how to do that. So I went through a lot of time growing up trying so hard to be happy. And I always felt like you had more happiness than I did. And if I just had what you had, I'd be okay. Or if I had what you had, I'd be okay. And if I had different clothes or I went to a different school, if I hung out with these people, I'd be happier. Okay? This is what I've chased my whole life. I've never been okay right where I'm at. I remember getting spanked. I was the first girl that got spanked growing up in the Catholic school. My mom didn't go to church for 2 weeks. So if I couldn't get attention the right way, I got attention the wrong way. And why I tell you that, because I'm going to read you a letter a little bit later that came from the campus, the director of campus ministries with my daughter went to Catholic school, thanking me for my direction and my help. How does that happen to a girl like me? It happens through this program. How do I become a good mother? How do I become the kind of daughter that shows up and helps her mother? How do I become the sister that I need to be? How do I become the friend to you, the right kind of friend? How do I become the right kind of employee? The only time I ever went to work is when I needed a paycheck so I could go out and party. And as soon as I had enough money in my pocket, I was gone. I had a conversation with my boss as I pulled in the parking lot tonight. And he said, he's setting up a review for me on Monday. And I was a little concerned. I thought, it's not time for my review. Why am I going to do this on Monday? Uh-oh, maybe I'm getting fired. Uh-oh, maybe if, you know, my mind is already out here. You know, I'm either all or I'm nothing. I'm very difficult to be right where I need to be, just okay. And I ask him. And, you know, that was hard for me to ask those questions. Sometimes it's hard to ask the very simple questions. Just be honest. I'm a little frightened. Why am I having a review? We're only 6 months into the year. He said, you know why, Jill? I'm glad you asked that. I wouldn't want you to go through the weekend worrying. What a concept. If he only knew. I've already looked for 3 other jobs. But the truth is, you know what he said to me? He said, because I want to make sure that we're taking care of you. Wow. How do I get an employer like that? How do I have that relationship? Because you guys have taught me that. And I'm very blessed. I got this job not because I went after the title and not because I went after the money. Because that's what I usually do. And I always think I should be an executive, even though I haven't taken the steps to get there. And then once I get there, I'm like, oh, I don't know that I can do this. And my sponsor told me, Jill, why don't you go look for a job to do what you want to do? What is it you really want to do? And that's what I tell the people that work for me today. You need to get up in the morning and you need to want to do what you do. You need to have a passion for what you do. There's nothing worse than getting up in the morning going to work when you don't really want to be there. And if I was the one writing the checks, wouldn't I want my employees to be like that? It took me a while to get to this point because I've had many jobs that I didn't like. I'm a nurse by background, and what I do today is not hands-on nursing, but I absolutely love my job. So I took a job that didn't have the title that I thought I should have, and it didn't have the salary that I thought it should have, but it was the money that I needed to pay my bills. Now, that I didn't say anything about my shopping habit that a lot of you know that I have. To pay my bills, okay? Something else you guys taught me how to do. There's nothing wrong with making money, but are you a good steward of your money? Is money your God? It's a question I've had to ask myself before. You know, and there's things that have happened to me in sobriety where I've hit bottom and I've hit that brick wall where it's the dark night of the soul, where I'm sitting in a very nice house with nice cars and a whole lot of clothes, and guess what? I'm not a happy girl. Right after my mom died, I went out and I distracted myself, and that's what it was. I did everything and anything I could to try not to feel what I was feeling. So I found myself in a really nice house with a nice car and a whole lot of clothes, and I was pretty miserable. And I realized today that I can't put a price tag on God. But I'll try. But I will try. So I'm growing up. I have a brother that's 9 years older than me. And you know what? He, for some reason, just kind of does this. You know, he just goes to school. He gets good grades. He has a girlfriend. He marries her. He has kids. And I'm like, wow, my life does not look like that at all. Okay? I actually didn't go to his graduation. He's a very smart man, because I was at a grape stomping contest. Something at some bar that was really important that day. You know, what I realize is people today do things for themselves. They don't do things to me. They don't do things to you. They do them for themselves. And that's another thing you guys taught me. I didn't do that to hurt my brother. I didn't do the things to my parents to hurt my parents. I did them because I wanted to do them. I'd have laughed at, what do you say tonight? I have a list of things not to do. I was like, I'm home. I've heard that before. So I was never a sister to my brother. And, you know, when I made amends to my brother, the thing he said is, you know, you are a constant distraction in our family. You know, he was a good kid. He was a good kid. But guess where my parents were always focused? Guess what they were always doing? Putting out fires, picking up Jill, putting her back together again. And I always said I was like Humpty Dumpty. My dad just kept putting me back together again. I mean, when we went to look at financial amends, where do you start? This girl wrecked 12 cars. I burned the house down. I mean, I can go on and on and on. How do you pay that back? Better yet, the question I have to ask is, how do I mend a broken heart? I'm a parent of a 21-year-old. Let me tell you what it's like to get phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning. You can't ever quite understand. You know, inventory takes me through a process that I can get a glimpse. But you know where it goes from here to here, and I truly understand the kind of pain that I've caused in people's lives is when I'm face-to-face with people and I make an amends. I've always based my whole life on intentions and my thoughts and my feelings. And what you guys taught me to do in this program is to take that and actually do actions that are a little bit different than against my own will. It's not the things I would normally do. And I sometimes think, are you crazy? When I have a sponsor tell me you need to go do this or you need to go do this. And I'm like, and it's exactly what I think won't work for me that does work for me. And I go back to say, I don't know who my teacher is. I do not know. I think I know who can help me. And it usually isn't. I had a girl that was in one of my first workshops that I really didn't like at all. And I always want to tell the story because I didn't like her because I judged her from the outside, okay? Imagine that. I can walk in a room and see 10 people that I know I don't like, but I've never met you, okay? Do you know how many miracles I miss because of that? It breaks my heart. I've had moments where I was like, oh, I didn't like her, but I didn't want to tell anybody that. But that happened in my first workshop. There was two women that I thought, not hanging out with them, not sitting by them, not talking to them, I'm better than them. Those are the two women that taught me the most. And what I've learned is I cannot judge a book by its cover. I miss the story when I do that. I really miss the story. I didn't like her. I thought she was less than. I had all, you know, it just full of judgment. And Linda told me, I want you to go buy her a gift. No, I don't think that's what I need to do. But you know what that action did when I bought that gift? It was something I wouldn't have done. I stepped out of what Jill thinks is right because I think I know best. And what happened in that gift, in that act of kindness, is that door opened. And I got to know somebody that was a beautiful person, but I would have never got to know her if I would have gone with what I think is always right and who I think I need to hang out and who I think I need to be with. Because I think I know what the answers are to my life. But you know, if I knew the answers to my life, why the heck would I be here? I've been to all kinds of doctors, very intelligent people. They couldn't fix me. You know where it happened? It happened looking into the eyes of another alcoholic. That's where it happened. No specialist, no degrees. Well, degrees of some sort, but something happened. And what that was hope. Because I believe God works through us. Answers don't come from me. They come to me. And as I was talking about my childhood growing up, I alienated everybody that loved me. I used them. I didn't mean to hurt them. I really didn't believe I meant to hurt them. But I did. Because all I cared about is what I could get for myself. And as I drank, as I said, I wrecked numerous cars, went through wind chills, had to be lifelined into hospitals. My dad never knew, and what he said to me, Jill, I never know if my little girl's going to come home in one piece. And it became, no news is good news. That's a hard thing to live with as a parent. I know that today. That's a hard thing to live with. I end up getting married, and I married somebody that drank like me. Of course I did. Because that's where my drinking went. You know, water seeks its own level. People are not going to hang out with me doing the things that I'm doing. I go out with my friends and I leave them. I get on planes and I end up in another city. It's another state. You know, it's like, whoa, Joel, what happened to you? You're like Sybil, you know? So I end up marrying a guy that was a lot like me. And he drank a little bit more than I did and was a little crazier than I was at the time. We know this is a progressive disease. And so what happened, we were off to the races. And it became a very violent, a very unhealthy situation. Out of that marriage, I had a daughter. We had a daughter. And for that, I am grateful. That relationship became extremely violent. And I did all the things that I swore I would never do. I never thought I would act like that. At the end, I never thought I would strike back. And I had something happen to me when I left. And it was, I snapped. And I realized at that point in time, I thought, I'll hurt you. I'm a nurse by background. I don't want to physically hurt people. That's not my nature. But I felt at that point, I can hurt you. I will hurt you back. I will take you out. I don't know how that happens, but that's a frightening place to be. And after I left, he ended up running my father off the road, and he had an accident, and he had a massive coronary, and my father passed away. And I always say, when I look back at the things that I did and the decisions I made, and how it impacted so many people's lives. And so I'm sitting across the table from my mom, and I'm sitting next to my brother who still doesn't like me, and I'm looking in their eyes and the hurt. And she's lost her husband in 40-some years. He's lost his father. How do I deal with that? I don't know about you, but when I have pain and I have remorse, I deal with it. I drink and I run. I do this. And I'll leave you with the pain, and I'll leave you with everything I've done, because I got to get out of here, because I don't know how to cope with those feelings. And every time I did something like that, I ran. I burned the house down, I got in my mom's car, and I drove to California. Sound like a good place to live. You know, I need to hear my own story sometimes, because often I get really upset with my daughter, and the truth is, she doesn't do a fraction of the things that I've done. But I also know today, because you've taught me, that I don't have to enable anybody. I love her. I don't like her behavior sometimes, but I do love her. I won't pay for her to do things that could hurt her or others. And sometimes I have to say no. I've been told I hate you, Mom. Okay. I love you.
I don't like you either.
But you know what? I don't want to do the same things to her. I don't want to allow her or enable her. I know this disease kills. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if she's going to end up in these rooms. The thing I know is that, and I've been told before, this isn't punishment. All I know is I want to be that example, though. And I want this to be an example. If there is a problem, you can come here. You don't have to live like that. You don't have to go through the things your mom went through. She knows my story, most of it. She always says, "Don't come to my don't come to our house after partying, because my mom knows where you pull in the neighborhood." And by God, I do. I'm like a bloodhound. It's like ding, ding, ding. They've been drinking. I'm standing at the door. The thing I know today, though, that I can be a mom and I can be present. I can show up in her life. Chelsea doesn't remember me drinking, but she does remember me being absent. Because I would get when I went out, I got a babysitter and I left. And when I came back, I didn't feel too good. So usually there just went a movie in, and I was just there. Today I'm a little bit more than just there. I think she'd like me to be absent sometimes now. You know, and as she gets older, we have our differences. She's at an age I got to accept. I am powerless. I know what powerless means. I know what it meant when I came in these rooms. Because guess what? I was out of ideas when I came here. Although if Ronnie's in this crowd, he may disagree with me. Because I just said, if I can just get that boyfriend back, if I can just get that relationship back, I'll be okay. Like, oh my God. The thing I know today is that I had to get sober for myself. And thank God, because I got in a relationship. And he said, you know what, Jill? We're not doing this. You won't quit drinking. It was the love of my life. I'm done. It's over. There was no manipulating it. There was no getting him back. It just wouldn't work. And for once, somebody said, no. I love you, but no more. So what was I left with? Myself. And my drinking went from, it used to be fun, to it quit working for me, guys. And I always say I couldn't drink and I couldn't not drink. So guess what I tried to do? I wanted out. I wanted it to stop. Everything up here, I just wanted it to stop. Turn the show off, I want out. I want to go to sleep, I don't want to wake up. If our disease is not selfish and self-centered, what is it? I have a beautiful little daughter, but I want out. Because I can't handle this. Again, I don't do things to you. I do them for myself. So I tried to end my life. And I couldn't do that either. Now, at the same time, I'm the crisis and suicide counselor. I'm running a chemical dependency unit in Bella Vista in Indianapolis. And I'm the drunk on the wrong side of the table. You know, but I don't think that any of these things happen by mistake, because something happened when I was with the patients, my patients. I heard something. I would go with my patients to meetings, and I would feel something for a little bit. Now, you know, of course, I was going to meetings just to further my education on alcoholism. But, you know, when I left those meetings, what happened is I was okay for a little bit of time. And I was like, okay. I can exhale. You know, I have a little bit of room here. And then guess what? 1 hour out of a day is not much. And it was during that time that I said to a friend of mine, Mike, I think I have a problem. And that's when he sent me to Ronnie. And I have to tell the story on Ronnie just because he was another one that got in my face and said, I don't care what you have to say. Stop crying. I don't want to hear it. I would drive down to Louisville on Saturday morning, which I don't do Saturday mornings very well either. And he taught me that if I said I was going to be somewhere, I needed to show up. That was not another thing that I did. I would start things. I always say, but I don't have any staying power, guys. You know, I would start it. I'd be gung-ho, and then I'd be done. I was like, shine wore off. I'm out of here. I did it with people. I did it with boyfriends. I did it with jobs, everything. Nothing had any staying power. It reminds me of Seinfeld. It's like, it didn't stick. It didn't stick. But anyway, it was like, so I did that. You know, I would come down here, I'd be like, and I would be so mad when I would drive down here and I'd leave and I would feel different. And again, there's something that happens between one alcoholic and another. And I got a little glimpse of what this program was supposed to be about. And I was told I was supposed to get a female sponsor, and I'm like, that would not have been my choice, guys, at all, okay? I knew what he needed to look like. I knew what his salary needed to be. You guys teach me the things that I don't need. I just don't know what's good for me. And I had to learn how to have a relationship with another woman. And I was blessed. I found my sponsor. You know, God puts people in our lives. And that was my sponsor up until about a year and a half, 2 years ago when she passed away. She was a beautiful woman that worked a very strong program. And I probably picked her because she had a nice suit on that night or something. But she knew the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what she taught me, I remember the first time, she's the one that got me in the workshop that told me to buy the gift for the girl. And I'm like, are you crazy? But for some reason, I was willing. I think Jill was out of ideas. I was teachable. I'm not teachable very often, guys. But I was teachable, so there was this window of opportunity. And she said, we need to go through the book. And we're going to do a workshop. And it's going to be a couple women, and we're going to go through the book, and when it tells us to do things, we're going to do it. When we're supposed to pray, we're going to pray. When it says write, we're going to write. And when we're going to do amends, we're going to go out, and we're going to knock on doors, and we're going to clean up our past. I'm like, okay. She never told me it was 9 months long, okay? Not only did I start to like the people in it, I started to love the people in it. I was safe within a group of women who I normally don't like at all. I started to learn what the sisterhood and sobriety is about. And then I started to learn that when it went from here to here, It went from intentions to actions that actually those old beliefs that we have about everything started to change. And when those things started to change, my perception started to change to life. And when my perception starts to change, I'm probably a little bit nicer person. Because you know what? Life still shows up. People are still not always nice. Stuff happens. But I have to be able to deal with that. And I found that when bad things happen in sobriety, I don't have to drink. You know, there are times I don't even think about a drink at all when bad things happen. It's just not on the radar screen. I was in sobriety. My mom got sick, and she ended up dying of cancer. And I remember sitting in the parking lot at the hospital, and my brother called me and said, "Where are you?" And I was sitting in the parking lot, and I was crying. I was trying to get myself together before I went up to her room. He said, "What are you doing, drinking?" I was 5 years sober, and I thought, how dare you? Well, why wouldn't he think that? Because that's what I've always done. But you know, drinking never, ever crossed my mind. I've been mad at people in sobriety. Drinking doesn't cross my mind. Homicide! not drinking. I had to laugh. I was thinking about Al-Anon because when my ex-husband, I went to Al-Anon once. And I remember I went to Al-Anon before I got sober. And I went because I wanted them to tell me how to get rid of him. And I thought if I went, my sponsor and I used to always laugh about, they're supposed to tell me where to bury the bones, you know? And we go to the Al-Anon meeting, they're like, detach with love. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness. It was like, are you kidding me? Today I realize how important that is because I've had people tell me how to do this with my daughter. I can love her right where she's at. I know what that powerless feeling is. What a beautiful program. It brings people back together. It puts families back together. It creates families. There's not a place that I can't go when I'm working. I can show up anywhere. And I'm not a stranger. There's always a family. I walk in the rooms of AA. There's always my extended family. I often tell the girls that I sponsor, please pay attention to the people that love you. I've lost my mother. I've lost my father. I just have one brother and one daughter. I miss them. If you haven't taken the time to do your amends, and mom and dad get on your nerves, don't miss the miracle, guys. Life is way too short. I think one of the things that my sponsor told me, losing a sponsor, I love this woman. She was like my other mother. And I remember we both went through some really hard times. I lost my mom. She lost her father. She lost her husband. And she said, "Jill, if I can tell you anything, I want you to live today as if it's your last day, not mine. The person I'm with's last day." And I forget that because I get so caught up in me and what I don't have and what I'm not going to get. And then something happens and it right-sizes me. Better pay attention to my time. So I get sober. I meet this wonderful person from Louisville. I end up getting a sponsor. I'm going through the steps and they tell me, you know, it's not just about going through the steps. It's not just about going to the meetings. It's time that you give back. And what that means is that you start working with others and you share your experience, strength, and hope with them. And I will tell you, that is the best medicine there is. Because often I forget. And by God, they remind me. You know, but I've hit times, like I told you about the time after my mom died, and I sat there and I tried to distract myself with buying things and all this other stuff. And, you know, I was really concerned because I felt like I went, got up every day and I put one foot in front of the other. And I didn't know what else I could do. I was working with a bunch of people. I was, you know, Linda and I were talking about, are you doing this? Are you doing that? And I felt like I was doing everything that I needed, that she asked me to do. And she said, "Jill, if things don't change, maybe you do need to go see your doctor." And I got a phone call about 10 o'clock that night from a girl that was a full-time job for about 2 years. I was like, damn, did I give her my number? You know what? I love her. We are polar opposites. And God, I just love her. Again, I don't know what's good for me. I read the big book to her. I helped her write. She couldn't write. We got through the inventory. We got through the amends. She called me every night. She cussed me out. And I came back tomorrow, the next day for more, you know. We taught each other a lot of things. And I do not know what's good for me. And it never shows up in the package that I think it's supposed to show up in. So, what I found is when Linda died is, when I was at the hospital, and after she had passed away, there was so many women coming through. She's helped and touched so many women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing that came to my mind, and I truly believe this is God speaking to me, it wasn't like, because my normal response would be like, what am I going to do? What about me? And my thought was, what a blessing. Linda always told me, Joel, I will not keep you sober. It's not my job to keep you sober. It's my job to show you how to do the work and find a God of your understanding. Don't be sponsor dependent. What a blessing. She prepared all of us women to finish her work. What a blessing. I talked a little bit about my mother, and you know, the program teaches us to go out and clean up our past and take care of the things that we've done to other people and to meet with people and to talk to them and to try to make it right. I remember meeting with my mom and making amends, and it's not just about saying you're sorry. It's about going out and sitting down with my mom and owning up to the things that I've done. And often telling her she did not deserve to be treated the way that I treated her. She was a wonderful person. And asking what I can do to set these wrongs right. Now, I told you, I burned down a house. I wrecked about 12 cars. I didn't mention how many times I was engaged in all the wedding dresses and things she bought, but I only got married once. I'm sorry. Financially, there was a lot of money to be paid back. But I don't know how, I didn't have that money to pay back at that time. But what you guys taught me is, it's about making a commitment and following through. So I may not have been able to write a check to her to cover that at that time, nor could I have. So I had to make an agreement with her that I could do. So we came up with an amount of money that I could pay her each week. And every Wednesday we met for lunch and I gave her a check. And I always laughed today because she always cashed them. But the thing is, I continued to write her a check. I never followed through on anything. I would tell you I'd pay you back and she'd say, Jill, why do I have to ask you for my money? Good point. Good point. When my mom got diagnosed with cancer, they gave her 3 months. What ended up happening is she lived about 2 years. The beautiful thing is I had no regrets when my mother died. Because for those two years, what happened is you guys taught me how to show up. I was on the other end of that phone line. Remember I told you I used to call her at 3 o'clock in the morning? Guess who got the phone calls now? But I got to show up and she said, you know what, I can count on you. I call you and I tell you how I feel, and you're here. Guys, that's not the girl I used to be. That's not the girl I used to be. And I got so mad at God during that period of time, and that's a scary place to be. Because if God is the only one that can help me, and that is my solution, and I'm mad at him, what do you do? And I thought, why are you doing this? Why are you taking my mother? She doesn't deserve this. And you showed me also that there's a process with inventory, through inventory and prayer, that I can get to a point that I can see. And what I was consumed with was the self-centeredness that I was scared to death of how I was going to feel during the dying process and when I lost my mother. And you know, in that inventory, nowhere was there any mention of my mom, of the person that was dying. How can I see those things? I mean, I don't know. That's not how I normally look at things. And there was a shift that happened inside of me. And during that time, what happened is I was able to show up. I was able to talk to my mom about death. I was able to talk to my mom about the active dying process. All the things that everybody's scared to talk about. Because what do you talk about when you walk in a room of somebody that's dying? You don't talk about dying, do you? You guys taught me how to walk through those fears. You also taught me to look at how I manage those fears. And with God today, there, you know what? I can get through these things. And so we did this. We cried together. We prayed together. We talked about death. We talked about what it was going to look like. And guess what? I did show up. And I was there for 2 years. At the same time, my mom had remarried. My stepfather was dying. He got diagnosed with a glioblastoma, which is a brain tumor. I didn't like my stepfather when I met him. Guess why? He didn't fix me. He didn't pay my bills. I wanted to finance my house. He said no. He said, how old are you? I'm like, well, I mean, I just got sober. You know, I'm like, he's like, finally, he said, you know what? I'll put my name on that house, and you have 12 months. And I thought, okay, well, you know, we won't worry about that once he signs off on it. Well, guess what? 9 months, 10 months, 11 months. He called, he'd call. Ready to refinance that house yet? He said, now we need to sit down and talk about credit cards. If you don't have cash, you don't need to pay. You don't need to buy it. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I getting myself into? He taught me the tough lessons. He loved me enough to tell me the truth. And that's what you guys have done. You loved me enough to tell me the truth. He taught me that if I didn't have cash, I didn't need to buy it. You know, I have a good life today because of those lessons. But I was willing to listen because, again, I don't know what's good for me. I talked to you a little bit about my daughter about 2 years ago. We had a little drinking going on, okay, as we were in college. And I told Chelsea, I said, I'm not paying for your car and I'm not paying for school. I'm not going to pay for a car and put wheels underneath you so that you can hurt somebody. Now, if you want to go to school and you get good grades and you're going to be a lawyer, you want to be on the right side of the bars, I said, let me tell you that if you want to go to school, I'll be glad to pay. Once you go, you get the loan, you get the grades, and I'll pay. You go, you party, it's your debt. And I had to ask her to leave my house in the middle of the summer. You're going to have to move out. And I sat down in the middle of my living room, and I cried and I cried. It scared me to death because I didn't know what was going to happen. It's my baby. Doesn't matter how big they are. It's my baby. You know, God took care of me. And God took care of her. Right now, she's going through a health scare. You know, we got some things going on. We don't know what it's going to be. But I trust God. I've been throwing a lot of curveballs, but God never drops me. Never drops me. And sometimes it's that blind faith that's just so darn hard sometimes. And when I first got asked to speak here, I'm thinking, I don't want to go. I'm not in a good space. I don't want to go down there and talk. And this is exactly where I need to be, with people like you. I love AA. This is my life. And it's always when I don't want to get up in front of somebody and tell somebody, you know what, I hurt. It doesn't feel good today because I'm worried about what you're going to think. And the truth is, we all have stuff happen. We're all broken one way or another. And we just love each other until we start to heal. Remember I mentioned to you about being the first girl that got spanked at the Catholic school. I was telling Chelsea, I laughed when I found this. They really didn't want me back there. I ended up moving on to a public school a little bit later. A little bit of a troublemaker. And when my daughter was back in school, they asked me to come to one of their retreats. And they wanted me to talk. And they said, even though Chelsea and I have we agree to disagree, she always says, you're my rock, Mom. When she's in a good place, you know, she said, we don't always get along, but you're always there for me. And you've taught me how to do these things. You've taught me how to get through life. And I had got this card from the director of campus ministry. And I just want to tell you that I want to share this with you because here's Joel before, being the first one that's Mom not showing her face at church to this. And this has nothing to do with me. This has to do with you and with the power greater than myself. But it says, dear Mr. Rusk, I wanted to thank you once again for sharing so beautifully with Chelsea. You are truly a woman of strength, and it's obvious who is your rock. Your faith is what you gave to our students, and that is the greatest gift you can give. Know of my personal admiration and respect for you and for the way that you have chosen to live your life. Thank you for letting God's love shine through. Wow, guys. How does that happen? We talked I told you a little bit about my employer. This is a job that I took that didn't have the title that I wanted or the salary that I wanted. I couldn't ask for a better job. I have a boss that appreciates me. I have people that I work with that care about me. When I got the call about my daughter and the fact that we have to have surgery and there might be some complications, you know the first person I called? My CEO. How could I be so fortunate? I said, Steve, what am I going to do? He said, you know what? It doesn't matter. We'll help you. I didn't used to have those kind of relationships. But I go to work, I put my time in, and they take care of me. But I'm also willing to be honest with him where I'm at. I used to be fearful to do that because I was fearful of what you would think. It's very simple. I make it very difficult. I look at my friends around me and I think, through all the difficulties, I have some people in this program that would do anything for me, anything. Beautiful people that are going through their own difficulties that will stop and say, what can I do to help you, Jill? But that's what you've taught us. One last thing, I talked about how to be a daughter, how to be a mother, how to be a sister to my brother. He actually doesn't mind being around me today. He's a great guy. And he's called me when he's known people that I've had problems with drinking. You know what he says? If my daughter can do it, if my sister can do it, maybe she can help you too. Wow. This is the guy that used to hold me under out at the swimming pool, just hoping the bubbles would stop, okay? That's a long way to come. Now, I can't say that all relationships get fixed. But as long as I clean up my part, that's what matters. But I'll tell you, the good certainly outweighs the bad. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. If I'm asked to do something, I show up whether I want to or not. That's something different. I try to be there for my daughter. I try to listen. I'm willing to sit down with my daughter and make amends to my daughter. And the first time I made amends to my daughter, I was scared to death what she was going to ask of me. I really was. And she said, Mom, I just want you to listen. I just want you to listen. Because I am so busy telling her what she needs to do. Because I think I always know what's best for you and for me. Just listen, Mom. Please, just listen. I have sponsees today that I sit down with and we share our experience. And I remember the first time that I met with Linda and we sat down and she asked for me to get on my knees and let's hold hands and let's pray. I thought, oh, I hope the blinds are closed and my neighbors don't see us. And I thought, this is weird. And you know what? I cherish that today. But I thought, oh, boy. And she said, I love you. And I thought, I hope not. I'm okay with that today. Because she taught me what it's about. You guys have shown me what love really is. And during that period of time when my mom was dying, I realized what unconditional love was. I had a brief moment. You know, things come and things go, and if I don't continue to work on this thing, I just get snapshots. But for once in my life, I realized what it was like to show up and care so much about somebody that there was not one bit of Jill involved in that. It was about giving, not about taking. And it was a beautiful moment. I don't know what tomorrow brings, but I'm sure with the love of the people in these rooms and with the God of my understanding today, I don't have to pick up a drink. I don't have to hurt anybody. And I'm sure that I'll get through it. I appreciate you asking me to be here. I look forward to getting to know you. I laughed when I called her to tell her I was here tonight. She said, I'm painting my nails. I'm like, my kind of girl. So I think that we have, you know, it's kind of funny how God puts people in your life. We were talking and she's a nurse and I'm a nurse. And it's, you know, any place that I've gone, you know, God puts people in my life. I just need to be awake. I need to be aware. And I need to be willing. I want to read something actually that came from the wall of Mother Teresa, the Home for Children in Calcutta. As I close tonight, again, I want to thank everyone. I want to thank you for asking me. I look forward to spending the weekend with you guys. People are often unreasonable, irrational, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you're kind, people may accuse you of being selfish and having ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you're successful, you may win some unfaithful friends and some genuine enemies, but succeed anyway. If you're honest and sincere, people may deceive you, but be honest and sincere anyway. What you spend years creating, others could destroy overnight, but create anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, some may be jealous, but be happy anyway. The good you do today will often be forgotten, but do good anyway. Give the best you have. It may never be enough, but give your best anyway. In the final analysis, it may be it's between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Jill. I could hear from you forever. I could continue listening to you all night, I think.